It's 7:43. I'm Teresa Wills. On this West Virginia morning, the dark side of social distancing.
We have realized very quickly that staying at home is not always safe for everyone.
And we hear from one researcher who has studied how global pandemics have shaped our history. This is West Virginia Morning. Since stay-at-home orders were issued by Governor Jim Justice in March, domestic violence is up in the state and around the country. But advocates have seen fewer referrals for child abuse cases, and they think that will change once social distancing ends. Liz McCormick reports.
Across West Virginia, there are several groups that help people in domestic violence situations find support, whether that's for supplies or shelter. But the coronavirus pandemic has upended some of the traditional ways of doing that work.
We have realized very quickly that staying at home is not always safe for everyone.
That's Katie Spriggs. She's the executive director of the Eastern Panhandle Empowerment Center in Martinsburg. The center is one of 14 licensed domestic violence programs in West Virginia that serve all 55 counties. These programs offer shelter, advocacy, support, and exit strategies for individuals and families in abusive situations. Spriggs says since the stay-at-home order was issued by Governor Justice on March 24th, calls for shelter through the Empowerment Center have gone up significantly, and at least half of those calls are a single parent with a child.
During a normal time, we get anywhere from 1 to 3 calls each day for shelter. I mean, our hotline probably rings 100 times in a normal day, but actually requesting shelter, like ready to go, exit plan, about 1 to 3. And now we're seeing about 6 to 8 in a day.
Spriggs says all of West Virginia's shelters are still open, but they've been inundated with calls. Spriggs says all the licensed domestic violence programs have taken extra precautions to keep people safe, not only from abuse at home, but from COVID-19.
We started by, moving the beds, and then we started incorporating extra cleaning into the schedule, obviously, extra sanitizing. And then we issued like our little own mini stay-at-home order within the shelter, so none of the clients were coming and going anymore unless they had a medical need, obviously, or they were going to work.
In the Eastern Panhandle, the Empowerment Center's shelter normally offers 16 beds, but due to social distancing, it's now 10. So they have partnered with 12 hotels throughout Berkeley, Jefferson, and Morgan counties to help provide shelter. Spriggs says during normal times, they would typically only have about one hotel partner per county. So far, Spriggs says she's not aware of any positive COVID-19 cases among those who they've placed in shelter. But what about the kids in all this, specifically? Kate Flack, CEO of the West Virginia Child Advocacy Network, or West Virginia CAN, said her team is actually seeing a decrease in the number of child abuse reports coming in, but not because there is less child abuse happening right now, but because there are fewer eyes on kids.
As soon as we have children back in closer connection, more frequent connection with their community-based allies and trusted adults, we do expect that there's going to be a spike in reports.
West Virginia CAN has a network of 21 advocacy centers serving 43 counties in the state. Centers support and coordinate the work of police, caseworkers, doctors, victim advocates, prosecutors, and other professionals. And they're still open during the pandemic. Last year, more than 4,500 West Virginia kids went to one of these centers due to allegations of physical or sexual abuse, exploitation, or other types of endangerment.
Most children in West Virginia are very safe in their own homes. However, those who are at risk of being abused, there's a good chance that their abusers are at home with them.
Flack says the child advocacy centers have started offering telemental health while still providing in-person forensic interviews for kids who may have been abused. But for Flack, it's still a struggle to find some things.
We've been trying to find materials for our centers, and they've been scrambling to find materials and to, even cleaning supplies. All of them were making sure that the kids are 6 feet apart from the interviewer, and most of them were making available masks.
Flack says 1 in 5 reports of child abuse nationwide come from school service personnel. But this week, Governor Justice announced schools in West Virginia will remain closed for the rest of the academic year, which begs the question, who will watch out for vulnerable kids stuck at home? Berkeley County Superintendent of Schools Patrick Murphy says it's about keeping that teacher-student support going through constant communication, whether through a phone call or a Zoom classroom, or just checking in on a child who visits a food drop-off. And if all else fails, he says his staff are prepared to stop by a home and check in on a child they may not have heard from.
Families that may not have technology or the ability to connect with some of the things that we are providing. So there may be nothing wrong. We can't jump to that conclusion.
Murphy says doing home visits while still keeping physically distant allows school staff members to see the students and connect that way to make sure everything is okay and to remind kids they aren't alone. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Shepherdstown.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Rain likely today with high temperatures in the 50s and low 60s. Tonight, rain and thunderstorms with lows in the 40s and low 50s. A chance of rain tomorrow with highs in the 50s and low 60s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a chance of light rain, lows in the 40s. On Saturday, a chance of rain and thunderstorms with highs in the 50s and 60s. West Virginia Public Broadcasting's program, Us and Them, is a show that explores stories about the things that divide us. Right now, that thing is a microscopic virus, the coronavirus. In the latest episode called Forced Apart, host Trey Kay speaks with someone who has studied society's reaction to pandemics throughout history.
With the world getting smaller every day, I wanted to know more about why a pandemic brings out fear and prejudice in some and the need to reach out and help from others. I found someone to help me sort through all of this.
My name is Damir Huremovic. I'm the director of psychiatry at North Shore University Hospital in Manhasset in Long Island, New York.
Dr. Huremovic is originally from Bosnia. He's studied and written about pandemics. And last year, he published a book called Psychiatry of Pandemics, A Mental Health Response to Infection Outbreak. In the book, Dr. Huremovic talks about pandemics throughout history. Some of the names were new to me, for instance, the Athenian Plague in 430 BC. But others are more familiar, the Black Death, the Spanish Flu of 1918, and also HIV, SARS, Ebola, and Zika. Dr. Huremovic says pandemics have shaped our societies and cultures in significant ways.
Our civilization is kind of wrought with these pandemics. There was a whole procession of them. They came at regular intervals, and as soon as we were able to record history, we were basically recording these outbreaks and these pandemics. As a matter of fact, I would dare to say that the infectious outbreaks or pandemics are kind of bookends of human civilization, because all the major religious books talk about pandemics and outbreaks very early in the nascent stages of human societies, and they all have this eschatological point of view where the end of days and the end of the world will also be accompanied by these outbreaks. So they play a very crucial role in our history.
What are we seeing about this virus outbreak that shows you how people react to panic?
We are seeing, I think, what we used to see in the past, but at a much more accelerated, in a much more augmented way. So now you have, first of all, modern ways of travel, which means that, you know, if it's in China today, it's going to be in Italy tomorrow, just like it happened. Mm-hmm. And also, you have this pervasive presence of social media, which means that anyone can sound off on what is going on, and that also serves to kind of amplify certain points of view, certain emotions that resonate with people. So in terms of apprehension or fear or optimism or courage or despondence, all of that is going to be at display through this plethora of social media that we have available right now.
So in this book that you have written, is there some kind of general pattern that psychologists or social scientists have observed regarding people's personal or collective responses to pandemics?
I think there is something that we have identified, but that there is this, what we can call emotional epidemiology aspect, which kind of mirrors the onset of and the spread of the pandemic itself. People start, first of all, it's not on their radar. Then it's on their radar, but it's somewhere far away. Then they start thinking about it. Then they become preoccupied. Then it kind of hits home. And they, even if they have not experienced it firsthand, they are seeing the lockdowns, fewer people in the streets. There is this run on the stores. So they start being very anxious and almost terrified. And then as the pandemic or an outbreak subsides, they also tend to banish the thought of what was so anxiety-provoking and almost existentially threatening into the kind of netherworld of their memories. And most people basically tend to forget very, very quickly.
I'm wondering, how do you see people's loyalties? Do you feel like they shift when they're tested during a time like this?
They can, but most likely they kind of just become more convinced and hold on to their beliefs.
So if we're kind of in that us and them posture, maybe even more of an us versus them posture, what does that do to our sense of social consciousness and shared responsibility that we all need to have?
It's a big test. And that is what I see as a major challenge for us going forward through the next couple of months. It's not really the disease itself. It's a very tricky disease because its epidemiological features are kind of just enough to pass it as a serious outbreak and a pandemic and so on and so forth. But in terms of mortality and everything else, it's nothing like the pandemics of the past. Yet, we are now imposing all these measures that may be drastic and in some aspects draconian that are going to have severe impact on our economy and our social fabric. And so that is where the challenge lies going ahead. It's how we are going to negotiate those threats to our social norms, social mores, certain level of civility. As I said, it's going to be very interesting going forward.
What do we know about the role hope plays in how people handle fear and anxiety?
Hope plays a tremendous role. You always have to kind of navigate between being realistic with the facts, being careful and cautious, and then being kind of an optimist about how this is going to play out. Even during the Black Death and during the Spanish flu pandemic, vast majority of population survives. It's not like we're all going to get it and we're all going to die. A, we are not all going to get it, and vast majority of those who get it are not going to die. So there is absolutely reason for us to be and remain hopeful that this is kind of a blip on the radar that we will be able to successfully negotiate and then learn from it so that we can be ready for the next, the big one, because this one really shouldn't be the big one. This is really kind of a warning shot for us to get a better understanding.
We've been listening to an excerpt of the latest episode of our show, Us and Them, titled Forced Apart, A Virus Creates New Divides. To hear the rest of the episode, tune in to West Virginia Public Broadcasting tonight at 8 or Saturday at 3 p.m. You can also download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the West Virginia Humanities Council. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.